Hello, this is Paula Kaufman with the Herald and Review dated Thursday, November 14th, 2024. We'll start with an article on the front page headlined Arts and Education. Richland Theatre has things to say. Revived drama group to tell diverse stories like Pipeline by Danette Beckett, Decatur. The newly reformed Richland Theatre are taking on challenges, and not just the subject matter of their shows. Director Michelle Stevens started the theater program after a 6-year gap. The newest cast will be on stage for the performance of Pipeline from November 15th through 17th at Richland Community College's Schilling Auditorium. An advisory board was brought together a couple of years ago to discuss Richland Theater's future. We wanted it to serve the community and some of Richland's initiatives, Stevens said. The focus was on areas of art that were underserved, including minority storytelling, while having a purpose and a mission. Stevens said, Pipeline is the group's second show since reforming. In September 2023, What the Constitution Means to Me was performed in one of the smaller rooms located near the Schilling stage. Actors and directors are currently discussing a future play, Curious Incident of the Dog and the Nighttime, with a focus on autism. Decatur has a very diverse population, and so does Richland, Stevens said. We know there's so much talent in the community. According to Stevens, Richland Theater has always included actors from the community, not just the college. That's one of its strengths, she said. High school students, college students, and faculty, as well as individuals from the nearby communities, have been on stage representing various characters. A casting call is sent through social media, local teachers and instructors' contacts, and through the grapevine. It's growing, Stevens said. Richland Theater began in 1972, performing various plays throughout Decatur, before the Schilling Auditorium was built in 1993. The plays stopped in 2017 due to various challenges. State budget cuts and other dilemmas hindered many productions. But just as we were bringing it back, COVID hit, Stevens said. Schilling Theater was also going through a transformation. It ended up being a 5 to 6 year gap, Stevens said. For the return of a theater company, Stevens understood to use a simple process with a smaller cast and set. She is also an instructor and has had the opportunity to read many plays. But the story itself is what really got me, she said about Pipeline. The play is based on a woman whose son has attacked a teacher in his private high school. His mother is a teacher in a public school. She is trying to do damage control and prevent him from being arrested, Stevens said. We're watching her navigate her life and watching her son navigate his. The Richland Theater actors hope to provoke conversations about the pipeline from high school to prison for young Black men. With the early issues and struggles, are they past the point of no return? The author of the play, Dominique Morceau, doesn't provide the answers, according to the director. Every single character has their flaws and their strengths, Stevens said. Nolan Evans, 16, is a MacArthur High School senior. He said he has seen the pipeline from school to prison. This would be a good opportunity for the community to watch something like this, he said. The play has humor mixed into the sensitive subject matter, according to the actors. Jennifer Thomas will be on stage as a teacher, and she is one in real life. She said she was attacked while she was teaching high school. I think this play is important, she said. Everybody in the play has issues. They all have wonderful pieces to them. And then they all have a side that's very morally ambiguous. Jatarius Reed, 19, plays the son who attacks the teacher. I feel amazing about this character, he said, but it was just a role I got. His mother, played by Kai Clark, also 19, is different from the actor. She is mentally unstable, but she's trying her best, she said. That's all moms really do. Although the cast is made up of several youth, they are flanked by experienced actors. Charles Robinson has acted on stages throughout Decatur since the Richland Theater Company formed decades ago. Working on Pipeline has been a positive experience, he said. The young people are committed to try out theater and see if they enjoy it, he said. I wish that I had been introduced to theater at their age. Working with a young cast has been exciting for the director as well. The whole cast is working so hard. It makes it so much more rewarding to come to rehearsal, Stephen said. We're going to have a nice show. If You Go. What? Pipeline, a Richland Community College production. When? 7 p.m. Friday and Saturday, November 15th and 16th. 3 p.m. Sunday, November 17th. Where? Richland Community College, Schilling Auditorium. Tickets, $10, $7 for students, seniors, and alumni. Available at the door or online at www.richland.edu/community/theater. This article is accompanied by two full-color photographs attributed to Joseph Ressler, Herald and Review. The first shows two men, one young, one not so young, sitting on folding chairs and is captioned, "Jeterius Reed and Charles Robinson perform a scene during rehearsal for the Richland Theater's production of Pipeline at Richland Community College in Decatur on Monday. Pipeline will be performed from November 15th through 17th at Schilling Auditorium." The next shows director Michelle Stevens and is captioned, "Director Michelle Stevens leads rehearsal for the Richland Theater's production of Pipeline. Stevens restarted the Richland Theater program after a six-year gap." Decatur. "School district expects tax base to grow," by Valerie Wells, Decatur. The Decatur School District's next budget is expected to benefit from an increase in the property values in the district, which could go higher with the sunset of an existing tax increment financing district. Setting a tax levy is dependent on an educated guess on what the district's equalized assessed valuation will be, Chief Operational Officer Mike Curry told the board at its meeting Tuesday. But a final figure won't be available until February. Yet, the board is required to set the levy in December without knowing what that final figure will be. "It's a broken system," Curry said. The school board will consider approval of a tax levy at its December 10th meeting. As of now, the EAV for the district is $890 million. But if the Old Town Tax Increment Financing District is added to the EAV, it will actually be $904 million. TIF districts are tools used by local governments to leverage future gains in property tax revenue to attract private investment to blighted areas in need of redevelopment. Any increase in property tax revenue gets diverted into the TIF, meaning that taxing bodies like school districts do not see the benefit of the increased increment during the life of the district. The Old Town TIF, which encompasses much of the downtown and the Milliken Heights neighborhoods, sunsets at the end of the year. Earlier this year, the Decatur City Council approved the creation of the Central Tax Increment Financing District, which covers the urban core. It overlaps with some, but not all, of the existing Old Town TIF. Curry presented four options and recommended choosing one if the TIF funds are added, an increase in the levy of 7.7%. And if the TIF is not added, the increase would be 6.29%. Either of those options would require a truth in taxation hearing at the December 10th meeting, which has been scheduled. Any increase more than 5% requires such a hearing. Curry said he was following a recommendation from board member Will Wetzel that a hearing should be scheduled annually, whether the board wants to increase the tax rate or not, as a way to offer the community as much information as possible. The board also heard an update on Roadmap 2030, the district's strategic plan initiative that includes a long-range plan for efficient use of district buildings. Open forums have tentatively been scheduled for January 30th and February 20th, where the community will be invited to attend and offer suggestions and ask questions. Time and location are yet to be determined. The Roadmap 2030 committee members have met once and will have a second monthly meeting Wednesday, said Jay Marino, Assistant Superintendent of Support Services. After each meeting, the district website, dps61.org, will be updated with all the information from the meeting, raw data, a summary, videos and photos, and the page is accessible from the home page of the district site. The December meeting will include presentations from the head of every district department, with the data describing academic performance, finances, staffing, and enrollment. We're going to show all of our dirty linen, all our warts, and let the data speak for itself, Marino said. We're making all that data available to the entire world if they want to look at our website. Everything we do or look at will be available for anyone who has interest in it. The committee is still in the early stages of developing the strategic plan, he said, and the first things they're doing is looking at reasons strategic plans fail, so they can create steps to put the plan into action. Board President Bill Clevenger told the board members that he and Vice President Jason Dion plan to contact the Illinois Association of School Boards for assistance in beginning the process of looking for a successor for Superintendent Rochelle Clark, who has informed the board of her intention to retire in June 2026. Beginning that process now, Clevenger said, will help with a thorough search and prevent problems down the road. With the superintendent search last time being a mess, I would ask that we have communication much like we're doing with the strategic plan. Show what steps we're at and adequately communicate to the community, said board member Will Wetzel. We need to do a better job this time. When Clark was hired, the search firm the school board chose presented two finalists, one of whom lacked the credentials to serve as a superintendent in Illinois, and the second finalist was rejected because the board could not unanimously agree. Clark, an internal candidate who threw her hat in the ring after the search firm's process was complete, was chosen after an interview with the board, and the district did not pay the search firm the final installment of its fee due to the fact that the firm had not presented a candidate the board could agree upon. Illinois, GOP to Pritzker, no new taxes. Senators at veto session seek pledge as deficit looms, by Brendan Moore, Springfield. With the state facing a projected $3.2 billion deficit in the next fiscal year, Illinois Senate Republicans are asking Governor J.B. Pritzker to pledge that he won't raise taxes and to bring their party to the table during budget negotiations. The Republicans' request came as lawmakers kicked off their annual fall session in Springfield. The two-week session is when lawmakers typically consider bills that were vetoed by the governor, along with legislative items not addressed earlier in the year. Since Pritzker did not veto any bills passed by the Democrat-controlled legislature this spring, this year's session features a less formal agenda. I'm calling on Governor Pritzker to pledge to not increase taxes on Illinois families and businesses in this upcoming budget year, said Illinois Senate Republican leader John Curran, Republican Downers Grove, during a news conference on Tuesday. Illinois has real problems right here that need to be dealt with. It is time for Governor Pritzker to take a break from the national campaigns and to start to think Illinois. The Republicans' call comes on the heels of a presidential election that saw President-elect Donald Trump perform better in Illinois than any Republican presidential candidate in two decades. Trump lost the state by about 10 percentage points to Democrat Vice President Kamala Harris. Despite state legislative Republicans not gaining any seats this cycle, a result the Republicans chalked up to districts gerrymandered to favor Democrats, Curran said that the results were a signal for Pritzker and Democrats to course correct and work in a bipartisan manner, especially with a distressing outlook on the budget. Unlike other Democratic governors in other states, like Pennsylvania, that have approached the election results with calls for collaboration and working in a more bipartisan manner, Governor Pritzker recently, with his press conference, has doubled down on his anti-Republican rhetoric, bashing Donald Trump and telling Illinoisans he was going to be protecting them from the incoming administration, Curran said. Despite the electoral outcome, he still does not seem to understand that he represents all Illinoisans, including the 2.4 million that voted for Donald Trump, Curran said. Just days before Election Day, the Governor's Office of Management and Budget released its annual Economic and Fiscal Policy Report, which projected a $3.2 billion budget deficit in fiscal year 2026 and growing to more than $5 billion by 2028. The GOMB report states that the fiscal challenge is daunting and, in a warning seemingly aimed at state legislators, lobbyists, and advocacy organizations, that the ability to fund new programs will be severely limited. Pritzker has often cast doubt on the accuracy of the projections, including last week, when he told reporters flatly that it's been wrong every year. In a statement, Pritzker spokeswoman Olivia Cuncio said that the governor will submit a balanced budget as he has done every year since taking office, adding that he remains committed to taking steps to further improve Illinois' fiscal position and address any potential budgetary shortfalls that may arise. If Republicans in the General Assembly want to come to the table and work on a practical, balanced budget, they are always welcome to do so. But past experience shows that this sort of showy political theater is the extent of their actionable concern for our state's economy, Cuncio said. Earlier this year, state lawmakers passed and Pritzker signed a budget containing a record $53.1 billion in spending. It relied on more than $750 million in tax increases and other revenue enhancements to be brought into balance. Curran said that the state's fiscal woes were a result of Pritzker and Democrats' gluttonous appetite for more spending, specifically criticizing the more than $640 million the state spent to address the migrant crisis last year. They also criticized $440 million in spending on a health care program for non-citizen adults who are not eligible for Medicaid. The challenges will only grow moving forward with increased pressure to fund education beyond the additional $350 million that's been added in nearly every budget since the state's evidence-based funding law was enacted in 2017. And Chicago area public transportation agencies face a $730 million fiscal cliff in the coming year as pandemic-era stimulus funds dry up. There will also be added pressure to enhance Tier 2 pension benefits, which are the less generous benefits public employees hired after 2010 will receive upon retirement. Though the reform has helped address the state's pension crisis, the benefits may need to be sweetened in order to meet the minimum threshold required under the Social Security Safe Harbor test. Curran asked where Republicans would cut amid these cost pressures and a desire not to increase taxes, did not offer any definitive examples beyond cutting spending that benefits undocumented immigrants. That spending only makes up a fraction of the projected deficit. "We are going to have to constrain spending," Curran said. "We're going to have to go line by line. Everything needs to be on the table for that, and that's a process that needs to start early." The past few years, Republicans have largely been shut out of the budget process, as Democrats, a factious supermajority, largely negotiated among themselves. Quinn advocates for millionaires' tax. Meanwhile, former Democratic Governor Pat Quinn also made an appearance at the Capitol this week to tout the passage of an advisory referendum question that asked voters if the state should pass a constitutional amendment enacting an additional 3% tax on income over $1 million. The revenue would then be used to grant property tax relief. Quinn said that voters spoke in a clear voice by supporting the measure with 60% of the vote. However, the likelihood of the policy actually being enacted is unlikely. Democrats also voted to place an advisory question on the ballot in 2014 regarding a millionaire's tax. It also passed. But when voters had the opportunity in 2020 to change the Constitution in a binding referendum to allow for a graduated income tax, they rejected it with 53% of the vote. Pritzker, the biggest proponent of the graduated rate, has subsequently said he would not advocate for a redo. Senate Republicans also dismissed the idea. Man gets jail for injuring woman, by Tony Reed, Decatur. Tayshawn J. Caldwell, the Decatur man who slapped his girlfriend so hard he shattered the bones around her left eye socket, is now serving a sentence of jail time and 24 months probation. The 16-year-old victim is quoted as telling police she had been arguing with Caldwell, 19, and had accused him of talking to other women when he lashed out and slapped her with tremendous force. She advised the force of the blow made her see stars and subsequently knocked her unconscious, said Decatur Police Department Officer Sean Bosher, who signed a sworn affidavit about the assault. She stated after regaining consciousness, she felt nausea, had difficulty breathing, was spitting up blood, and unable to see out of her left eye. Police interviewed the victim at HSHS St. Mary's Hospital on the night of the attack, which dates to January 4th, and Bauscher said doctors had described the extent of her injuries. They said she had suffered a depressed left orbital floor fracture extending into the nasal area. St. Mary's Hospital staff indicated this means her bone under her left eye was fractured, and there are portions of her eye fat that are seeping through the fracture, Bosher said. Caldwell was sentenced to 60 days in the Macon County Jail when he appeared October 17th before Circuit Judge Thomas Griffith and pleaded guilty to a charge of aggravated domestic battery. But the defendant won't be incarcerated for too long, however. Caldwell reported to the jail at 5 p.m. on the evening of October 24th to start his sentence, and with credits for time previously spent in custody, and other credits for being free with electronic monitoring, he's due to be released at the stroke of 12 a.m. November 20th. In addition to the jail sentence and probation, the judge ordered Caldwell to pay $250 to have his DNA added to a criminal database maintained by the Illinois State Police. Warrensburg Latham Kids Mark Kindness Day, Give to Shelter, by Valerie Wells, Warrensburg. For some time now, Karen Futen, a second-grade teacher at Warrensburg Latham Elementary School, has overseen projects in honor of World Kindness Day, celebrated each year on November 13th. The project of choice has involved encouraging kids to bring donations of toys, food, treats, and comfy beds for the Macon County Animal Control and Care Center. And that tradition will continue on Saturday as Futen and two other second-grade teachers, Kristen Price and Carla Miller, meet up with students and families to present those donations to shelter staff. 3 years ago, one of those students, Riley McNamara, also adopted a cat while she and her dad were there to present the class's donations. "We want to show kindness because people are so kind to us," Futen said. "And because children in second grade are especially interested in animals," she said, "the celebration focuses on making animals' lives better." Futen has two dogs, plus one that has crossed the Rainbow Bridge, that are rescues, and her students write to the dogs regularly, and the dogs write back. She uses the letters as a way to help her students practice writing and reading. But she also emphasizes that the dogs are rescues and the importance of kindness to others, be they animals or people. "We're going to take things to the animals at the shelter who are waiting for their forever homes," said Colson Mosley, 7, who read aloud the letter that the children will give to shelter staff when they drop off donations. "The motto of the school," said Wally Rogers, also 7, "is work hard and be kind. I always like to help animals, because if they're in the shelter, I would like for them to be healthy," Wally said. "I would like to provide them with good food." Wally has 3 cats and 2 dogs at home, he said. "If animals are in the shelter, we know that they were either found with no home or they were hurt," said Carolyn Avioli, 7. Wednesday was World Kindness Day, and it also happened to be an early release day for Warrensburg Latham students. The second graders were allowed to wear pajamas to school and watch the movie Migration while eating popcorn provided by the kindness of a donor. People are kind to us, and we try to be kind to each other. And we just want to pay it forward and be kind to animals, because animals are very important to second grade. That's for sure, Futen said. Man Who Shot Up Bed Gets 2 Years by Tony Reed, Decatur. The Decatur man who shot up his own bed mattress and told the arriving cops he needed martial law is starting a 2-year prison sentence. Police had got involved after being alerted by the landlord of defendant Cody A. Christ's apartment building in the 400 block of West Prairie Avenue. The landlord said she was becoming increasingly concerned by Chris's crazy behavior. She said Cody has not been acting right, taking the door off of his apartment and throwing things around, said Decatur Police Department Officer Christina Chemnitz, who signed a sworn affidavit. The landlord said she had heard either gunshots or fireworks from the back of the building by Cody's apartment. When officers made contact with Cody, he was extremely agitated, stating he needed martial law. The trouble dates to the morning of July 1st, and Chris, 27, also told police he owned a gun, which he had been busy cleaning in the bathroom. Chemnitz said he had also admitted firing the weapon more than once into his bed mattress, although no real reason was listed for the defendant shooting his own bedding. I observed a single mattress with no bed frame lying on the ground, said Chemnitz. I observed a suspected bullet defect to the mattress. I also observed 2 suspected bullet defects to the wood below the mattress, consistent with being caused by a projectile. Krista denied charges of being a felon in possession of a weapon and the reckless discharge of a gun, but was sentenced October 17th after taking a plea deal negotiated by defense attorney Lindsay Evans. Chris told Circuit Judge Thomas Griffith he was now pleading guilty to the reckless discharge offense, and the judge then agreed to dismiss the felony possession charge. Passing sentence, Griffith also ordered the handgun involved to be destroyed. In brief, unmasked to kick off holidays. Decatur. The Decatur Unmasked Christmas Extravaganza will return for another year. The event will be at 3 p.m. Sunday, November 17th at St. Paul's Lutheran Church, 1 Backrack Court, Decatur. 3 headlining acts, Broken Brogue, Michael Shearer, and Zach Garrett, will highlight the Free Salvation Army Christmas Concert. 5 masked individuals from the community will also perform in Decatur's version of The Masked Singer. Donations will be accepted for the Salvation Army's Christmas campaign. For more information, visit the local Salvation Army website or Facebook page. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half of the Herald and Review, dated Thursday, November 14th, 2024. Please stay tuned.